Greetings, greetings once again to all my enemies and all my friends. Well, you may have heard the news, but stand by now for the worldview. Worldview. I'm your host, Doug McBurney. Welcome back. It's the show where we don't take calls. We don't tolerate sponsors, but we do help you focus on the events of the week through the lens of original thought. It's so good to have everybody back here. I want to start out with the rather odd and uncomfortable announcement that Medina Spirit has won the Kentucky Derby. Medina Spirit. Anyway, it just seems odd. Does that not strike you as odd? First of all, I don't think you're allowed to drink in Medina, so I don't think there are any spirits there. And why is an American naming his horse Medina Spirit? I just don't get it. It just strikes me as odd. I don't like it, okay? And it's not that I don't appreciate the cultures of other nations and peoples and blah, 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 blah. I don't appreciate Islam. There, I said it. I don't appreciate it. I wouldn't promote it. I would never name anything in my vicinity of after it. None of our animals are named after anything Islamic. So there. Okay, so we've got Medina Spirit winning the Kentucky Derby. We have Rudy Giuliani. Rudy Giuliani's house was raided by the equivalent of the Nicaraguan Secret Service over this past week, oddly enough, in just another signpost along the slippery slope to tyranny that we've been slipping and sliding down for the better part of, over a year now. I just said to a clerk at the drugstore, I said, you know, the emergency for which they ordered you to wear a mask ended about a year ago. She said, I don't care. I said, you're a deluded moron. I said, what are you worried about, your career as a cashier? Anyway, deluded moron, I call. I know, it's not very nice, but I'm kind of not in a very nice mood about this whole thing, as you may have been able to tell. All right, I'll get back to some of that stuff. Let's go to the news, where I've got the headline from the Washington Examiner. Thomas Gorsuch and Barrett join the liberals on the Supreme Court in an immigration case. I thought Thomas Gorsuch and Barrett were three of the liberals on the Supreme Court. I mean, I don't think there's an actual conservative on the Supreme Court. I don't think so. Anyway, they ruled on a provision of the Illegal Immigration Reform and Immigration Responsibility Act of 1996. Who cares? Who could possibly care? They're dotting I's and crossing T's as the ship capsizes. It's just amazing. But here we are. Okay, so there you go. Your liberal Supreme Court at work. I don't know what they ruled on. I don't know what they ruled about. Did they rule properly? I doubt it. That's all. I just have my doubts. Meanwhile, from the Old Normal file, three people were killed Saturday night, including a suspect at a hotel near Green Bay, Wisconsin, in yet another mass shooting. I hate this. Three people were killed, including a suspect, after a shooter opened fire. Don't include the suspect in the body count. That's disrespectful to the victims. I thought we established this 20-some-odd years ago with Columbine. I remember when Columbine happened, I was on the air with Bob Enyart, and we excoriated the local media for including Harrison Klebold in the body count, and we excoriated a bunch of people. And they eventually came around to our way of thinking, at least for a little while. But we seem to have, the media seems to have slid back down that particular slippery slope, from which I'm sure they will not return. So that's the Old Normal file. Or another one from the Old Normal file. There was a 13-hour standoff in Boone, North Carolina. Two deputies were killed, and that prompted the standoff. Let's see, two deputies. This is just awful. Sergeant Chris Ward and K-9 Deputy Logan Fox were dispatched to a house. When they entered the house, they were shot and killed by a maniac. The first cop died at the hospital. The second cop, the K-9 cop, he was on the scene and remained in the house, presumably shot dead during the entire standoff. Wow. Just horrible. This is the old normal. I don't see the name of the suspect. Not that I would even name him. Apparently, the suspect also killed his mother and his stepfather. And that's what prompted the police to come, and then he shot and killed the police. Why? Because killing police is an option now in the commission of various crimes, whether murder or looting or rioting. Or killing the police is something that is in the toolbox for more and more criminals. And let's keep in mind, it was that way before George Floyd, and it was that way before COVID and all of that. That's the old normal returning. And more from there, from the domestic tranquility file. Wilmington, Delaware, authorities have confirmed that Corporal Keith Heacock, 54-year-old, 22-year veteran, died after being brutally assaulted last Sunday morning. He was found unconscious after he responded to a fight-in-progress call at about 5 o'clock in the morning. He was attacked by a 30-year-old criminal who is also accused of assaulting an elderly couple. Witnesses say that the killer slammed his foot repeatedly into the officer's head while the officer lay unconscious. Officer Heacock was declared brain dead, and then all of his organs were harvested, and then he has now passed from the scene. And from there, not that it gets much better, we go to the widespread tyranny file, where, let's see here, John Sherwood is a pastor in West London. That's over in the United Kingdom. That's England. Do I need to define it more narrowly for the maleducated in the audience who matriculated in the government schools? It's a long ways away. People like to say that America and England are two peoples divided by a common language. Look them up. That's where we came from. At least that's where America came from. But anyway, in West London, Pastor Sherwood, well, there's a video clip of him. He's an elderly fellow. And there's a video that's gone viral. He was confronted by police and then forcefully handcuffed and led away. Why? Because he publicly defined marriage as a relationship between a man and a woman. That's right. He said that with his voice and his mouth out loud by reading the Bible. That's right. He said, "I was just saying what the Bible says. I wasn't wanting to hurt anyone or cause offense." Well, Pastor Sherwood, you should surely understand by now that reading the Bible is going to hurt and offend people, because the truth is offensive to those who hate the truth. The truth is hate to those who hate the truth. So you stand up, you read the truth, and you're going to be dragged off in handcuffs in the modern, twisted, deviant, deluded, backwards, upside down world that we live in. The pastor, according to, let's see, Summit News, the pastor was released without charge after spending a night in jail. So they kept him in jail overnight for reading the Bible in public. That's true. Hopefully he got some extra reading in, you know, and a good meal, I hope. So he was released without charge, but he's still under investigation by the Crown, and he could be charged later, pretty much at any time, if they decide they want to take him down, if he gets too mouthy. If he takes off his mask, and stands up like a man. That's right, if he displays any display of masculinity, could get this guy thrown in jail immediately. Masculinity. Yeah. No, not mask. Oh, masculinity. I didn't get that. That's a bad pun that I wasn't even going for that. I wasn't even going for a pun on that. I was going to say testosterone. But anyway, don't stand up and act like a man. It's offensive to people. And don't act like a man who's sure of any moral truth. If you stand up and assert that anything is morally true and undeniable and not up for debate, you're offensive and you'll be handcuffed and dragged away. So we go from Pastor, let's see, what was his name? Pastor John Sherwood over there in Sherwood Forest over there in England, West London, as a matter of fact. I think that's where all the queers are in London, is West London. Right? It's like West Hollywood is where all the queers are in Hollywood. Although I think Hollywood's pouring, they're pouring out the east, the west, the south, the north. But West Hollywood is the notoriously queer. And I think West London is also notoriously queer. So this guy's out there defining marriage as... By the way, Pastor Sherwood was not defining marriage as anything. And I think if you asked him, he would tell you that he doesn't have the temerity to define marriage. Nor does he have the authority to define marriage. He was simply reading from the book that the fellow who defined marriage wrote. That's all he was doing. And for that, of course, he's been arrested. And now we go from there to the Mark of the Beast file. Takes us to Canada, where we check back in with Pastor Artur Pawlowski in Calgary. There has been, a court has authorized police and health officials to, quote, use such reasonable force as they deem appropriate to gain access, unquote, to the building, the church of Pastor Artur Pawlowski. His church is called the Cave of Adullam Church, or the Fortress of Adullam Church. You could say either one, up there in Calgary. And now there's basically a warrant out for his arrest. The warrant was issued on April 23rd. But Pastor Pawlowski has not yet been arrested. The warrant forbids Pawlowski or anyone else from interfering with officials attempting to enter his church. And if he resists or anyone resists, the warrant permits law enforcement to, quote, to quote, do anything necessary, unquote, to arrest him. Anything necessary? I think a bunch of us should show up and make sure that anything is an awful lot. That's all. I'm about ready to get on a plane and go to Calgary and chain myself to this guy's church. I know. I won't do it because I don't know why I won't do it, actually. I might just do it. Anyway, so the warrant was issued on April 23rd. Yesterday, this Saturday past, Pastor Pawlowski held a rally right out there in public yesterday. And as far as we know, he's still free. He has not been arrested. Neighbors of his church claim that they've been terrified and terrorized by the church because they see all these people gathering without masks. So they're all scared, especially the queers. So the queers made sure that they hung a queer flag out their queer window in view of Pastor Pawlowski's congregation. And the news media up there in Canada went and did interviews with all the queers and the deviants and the perverts and the cowards and the deluded morons who live around this church. And they basically say that these people in this church are crazy and they're scaring us and they're not wearing their masks. And Pastor Pawlowski looks suspiciously, not masked, but masculine. Why don't you grow up and be a man? Hey, I know what it takes to be a It's the Weekly Worldview, and I'm your host, Doug McBurney. Welcome back. Thank you, boys. We always appreciate that. And so the, I got a complaint from one of my listeners that the breaks are too long. The breaks are too long, and I said, you got to take that up with my extremely attractive audio engineer. Anyway, I deflected. This is what I did.
Don't blame me.
All right, I'm not going to blame. It's nobody's to blame, really. It just is what it is. And that's the unfortunate thing about the podcast is, unlike, you can't really fast forward reliably through the this. Anyway, so you just have to suffer. Along with everyone else out there, just suffer. Okay, so why was Dr. Pawlowski's story in the Mark of the Beast file? Is because Dr. Did I say doctor? Why do I do that? I don't mean to insult the pastor. Pastor Pawlowski has not taken the mark. All of his queer neighbors around him have taken the mark. And so while I don't think the mask is quite the Mark of the Beast, it certainly is a preview. So from there, we go to the politics file, where we check in with Johnny Rotten. Johnny Rotten is something of a conservative now. It's inexplicable. This is from Breitbart, which is an allegedly conservative, right-of-center news outlet. And they're reporting on a UK Times interview with Johnny Rotten, where he laments the destruction of America by liberal Democrats.
What is it, Johnny Rotten?
Johnny Rotten was the frontman for the punk rock group The Sex Pistols.
You don't know?
Okay. Well, Johnny Rotten says, I'm watching America collapse now. We've all had enough of politicians. The woke... Johnny Rotten was one of the driving forces of collapse against Christianity and against Western civilization. Johnny Rotten was one of the reasons that the West collapsed. When the history is written 1,000 years from now, Johnny Rotten's name will be mentioned as part of the cultural rot that destroyed Western civilization. And apparently he's upset about it now. But Johnny, you did it. Nowhere does he apologize for his vulgar and putrid contribution to the decline and fall of Western civilization. He just says that Donald Trump's a great guy and the woke people are annoying to him. It's just unbelievable. I'm going through the news this morning, and one of the other conservative sites has an interview with Glenn Danzig lamenting woke culture. And I'm thinking, these are people who actually did it. They're the people who knocked the legs out of the chair that was holding up the West. And now they're unrepentant about it. So they should have no right to talk about any of it. Just shut up and go get another tattoo, you loser. Anyway, there was a poignant part of the story with Johnny Rotten, which is really... So if you remember back to the days of punk rock, they were all skinny and pale and high energy, and they jumped around and screamed and yelled how they were never going to die and all of that. Johnny Rotten spends his days now caring for his wife, who's dying of Alzheimer's disease. And that's all he does. It's a full-time job, he says. Caring for a dying loved one. And how does that not change his perspective on everything? Well, it has, right? It's changed his perspective on some things. He's become something of a conservative, or at least he's annoyed by the frothing-at-the-mouth leftists. But it probably hasn't quite changed his... worldview on the big thing. The big thing, Johnny. The big thing is not anarchy. Right? Johnny, anarchy turned out not to work, right? But that's what you were singing about. But it turned out not to work. And now you end up caring for your elderly wife who's dying of Alzheimer's disease. And you're going to watch her die right in front of your eyes, Johnny. And maybe that will get your attention enough so that you'll change your worldview about the big thing, Johnny. And that's the big thing, is what's going to happen to Johnny when he dies, which is going to be very soon. All right. And Glenn Danzig, forget it. Just forget it. Just get out of here with that. Creep. All right. So from the politics file, we jump right into the insurrection file. And by the way, when the history of all this is written, it will be noted that here at the Weekly Worldview, we started using the term insurrection in June of 2020, when the insurrection actually started. The rest of the news media caught up to us in January of 2021, and then they misapplied that term to what was a mostly peaceful dust-up at the Capitol after the election was stolen, bald-faced stolen in front of God and everybody. The end of our country was just basically stuffed and our faces were rubbed in it. And so some people got upset and they tore down some fences. And anyway, but it was mostly peaceful. But the insurrection actually started, somewhere around January of 2020, when the news media started building up the fear, the panic mode, the everybody be afraid, everybody gets, let's all get scared. That's when the insurrection started. I don't know. A lot of people would say, no, Doug, it started around the beginning of the 20th century when the progressives were allowed to. No, it actually started around 1860, back when the Civil War happened and Darwin wrote. I don't know. I guess you could go all the way back to the garden. When did the insurrection start? All right. But the current insurrection that's at hand started with COVID. It really blossomed with the riots. And now, from the insurrection file, the Gateway Pundit reports that BLM and or Antifa, because they're interchangeable, I do believe, targeted an upscale restaurant in Louisville, Kentucky. They started screaming at the patrons who were sitting in outside the cafe trying to eat dinner. So they started screaming at the patrons, well, this ain't New York. This is Louisville, Kentucky. So one of the patrons stood up and pointed a gun at them. And said, come on, let's go, and stuck a gun. Anyway, one of the patrons pulls out a pistol, and then apparently, I haven't watched the whole video, but the Gateway Pundit says at least one of the BLM Antifa protesters was armed as well. Okay, well, you know what? If the government can't or will not protect us, and we're not able to sit and eat dinner like civilized people, we will protect ourselves. So I won't eat. I'm not going to go to a restaurant without a gun. These maniacs come up to me. Anyway, we were out, and I walked. I noticed a guy, spotted a guy in the crowd as we were walking in a rather crowded Cinco de Mayo festival-type environment. And I spotted his T-shirt with a pro-Antifa message on it. And I realized that he didn't really see me coming. And he was turned all halfway away from me, looking through the window of a store. He might have been thinking about breaking the window and looting the store. I don't know what was going through his little pea brain. But I managed to walk right up to him and then brush my chest right up against his shoulder just as he turned and noticed I was there. By the time he noticed I was there, my face was just a few inches from his face. And I had a scowl on my face like, I don't like you. And then I just walked right on by. Now, this guy was, he had a bandana on and sunglasses and a mask, maybe two masks. And I couldn't tell if he was black, white, brown. I couldn't tell how old he was. But I knew by the T-shirt that he was one of these Antifa types. And so I just wanted to let him know that I knew what he was and that I was not afraid. In fact, I wanted him to know that I hate him. And believe me, when we locked eyes, although I couldn't see his eyes because he had the mirrored shades on, I can assure you he knew that I hated him. And he didn't do anything about it. He didn't accuse me of cultural appropriations or racism or white supremacy or anything like that. He just kind of moved out of my way and I walked right on by. All right, so if the government's not going to protect us against Antifa, we're going to protect ourselves. And of course, people say, Doug, that's just what they want. They want to have some kind of armed conflict. Well, that's just what they're going to get. I'm sorry. I don't want it to happen either. But if the government's going to cower and let them burn down police stations, eventually we're going to have to defend ourselves. And people shouldn't be allowed to scream at people who are eating dinner. They should immediately be arrested. The police should be there within a minute. I mean, it's Louisville, Kentucky. It's not like the middle of nowhere. There's police within 2 minutes. These guys should have been dragged out of there, thrown in jail. But no, anyways, here we go into the deeper into the insurrection file, where we check in with Dylan Shakespeare Robinson. He's a 23-year-old Antifa BLM type. He's been sentenced to 4 years. Why? He's the one who set fire to the police station in Minneapolis back when on a show I did called The Big Flinch. You remember? This was where America flinched like never before. Never seen anything like this. They let the mob burn down a police station. This is the guy who did it. This is the guy I was talking about who should have been shot dead in Minneapolis that night. And that would have ended all the rioting. This guy and whoever was near him should have been shot dead, but they weren't. Instead, he was videotaped, throwing a Molotov cocktail. So now he's been, he went to trial, but they didn't have a trial. He pled guilty because they made a deal. 4 years for burning down a police station. He should be executed publicly. Should have been shot dead on the site. Anyway, he's been sentenced to 4 years that he won't serve and ordered to pay $12 million in restitution that he'll never pay. And the U.S. attorney involved in the case says the arson put lives at risk. It put lives at risk and contributed to widespread lawlessness in Minneapolis. Oh, thank you, Mr. U.S. attorney. With today's sentence, says the U.S. attorney, Mr. Robinson is held accountable for his actions. Really? I don't think so, Mr. U.S. attorney. In fact, I think this encourages more people to riot even more. He got 4 years. They know he's not going to serve 4 years. $12 million? He's never going to have to pay that. This is they're laughing at you. They're preparing more Molotov cocktails to throw at you, Mr. U.S. Attorney. He hasn't been held accountable at all. Let's see. The ATF spoke out on this. What does the ATF have to say? ATF is committed. I love the way these bureaucrats, they name their agency as if it's a person. So any normal person would say the ATF, but if you're in the ATF and you've drank the Kool-Aid, you just say ATF. I ran into this when I was working with FDA. I was like, how come you people keep leaving off the at FDA? Well, we're FDA. We are FDA. Okay. All right. So this is like a cult or something? Anyway, ATF is committed to investigating the civil unrest arsons of 2020 that occurred throughout the Twin Cities. Arson cannot be tolerated, unquote. That's quoting the ATF. Well, apparently arson can be tolerated. And with this, I would say that it's being encouraged. Now, how could anyone accuse anyone of letting that lick run too long? I mean, I could let that run for like a day and a half. I'd get tired of it anyway, but hey, it takes all kinds, and we want to be, what do we want to be? We want to be sensitive to the needs and desires of our, of ourselves, I guess. All right, now, I had a conversation with a colleague. I don't want to get into too much detail, but this colleague told me that, well, basically that she felt bullied into getting the vaccine. And so I did not understand that. I did not comprehend that. Like, the gears in my brain locked up, and I was like, huh? What are you talking about? Well, you know, I go to parties, and everybody's like, I got my shot. Well, did you get your shot? Do you have the first shot? Did you get the second shot? Did you get the JJ? Did you get the AstraZeneca? Blah, 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 blah. First of all, yeah, why are you going to parties? You're so, everyone's freaked out about the virus. Oh, it's because you don't really believe any of that. Oh, that's right. This is all for show. I forgot. Anyway, it's but is your whole life just for show? I said, how could you possibly be bullied into doing anything concerning your health? I mean, I could understand not having the right sneakers or whatever. I was in high school, too. That was, I'm not in high school anymore. But apparently a lot of people still are. So she felt pressured into getting the vaccine, and she went and got the first one. And then she said, by the way, I've had COVID twice. I said, okay. So first of all, you don't know if you've had COVID. You think you had it. Like every other person I talk to thinks they have it. Had it. I thought I might have had it because I had a cold. Turns out I didn't have it. I got no antibodies. I'm not that cool. But anyway, I said, listen, there's some good medical evidence that if you've already had COVID, that the getting this vaccine could be dangerous. So I said, just go get tested for antibodies. Fine. I said, by the way, if you've already had it. And I tried not to yell because people make me insane. If you've already had it, you don't need the vaccine, genius. Did you forget everything you ever knew about medicine? I mean, you don't have to be a medical doctor to understand that once you get this particular virus, you're immune to it. Like all the other viruses, respiratory viruses out there. Cold viruses and flu viruses. Okay, but no, anyway. Bullied into getting the vaccine. Me personally, okay, I'm not going to get the shot. I personally am not going to get the shot. If I get sick and die, I'm ready for that, okay? And I've prepared my children to take care of my wife and vice versa in the event that I'm not around. So nobody here at the McBurney compound wants to die. But we all know we're going to die. And we're not terrified about that. It's unpleasant and uncomfortable, don't get me wrong. But we're not freaking out about it, okay? So some of my friends and associates and colleagues, people I know, they say that getting the shot. Now, my main objection is the fact that innocent people were murdered and parts of their body were used in either the production or the testing of all the viruses. All the vaccines. So I know that. So I don't want to participate in that. So I think that that's my main objection. And then, have I already given this spiel? He asked his extremely attractive audio engineer. Because as I get older, I forget what I've said and what have I said on the show and what have I just ranted and raved to.
Maybe you're asking an old person.
That's right. I'm asking someone my age. Well, here's the thing is I don't go back and listen to the show because I'm not a narcissist. So maybe I've already given the spiel, but even if the murder of innocent people and the use of their bodies for Frankenstein-like experiments, even if that was off the table, I'm just not convinced that this bug would even put me in the hospital, let alone kill me. So I don't think it's worth getting an experimental vaccine. It's just not worth the risk to me. I'll take my risk with the virus. Okay, so, but some of my friends, they say that getting the shot, even if you know it was made using the bodies of murdered people, that's no worse than shopping at Walmart or buying an Apple laptop or going on Amazon because we can't go out of the world, right? So it's not a sin to get the shot even if you know where the shot came from. And so I disagree with that. I think that if you think it might be a sin to get the shot because of the dead babies and the murdered children and their body, I think it's a sin for you. And I mean, just because we can construct a defense of it for the ignorant, that doesn't make it less sinful for those of us who know, does it? I mean, I'm open to be corrected if I'm wrong, but I think for me to get the shot would be a sin. I think so. For someone completely ignorant of where it came from, I don't think it would be a sin. anyway. So on that note, I'd rather take my chances with getting sick and dying. That's all. And so now I just need to find a fake passport if I need it. So I'll keep you posted on that. I'm looking. I shouldn't even say that out loud, I know. But anyway, and you know what I thought about when I pondered this issue of, you know, is it a sin, and we, you know, you got to be in the world but not of the world, and we're all expected to provide for our family, and so to allow yourself to be vulnerable to get sick and die, is that, where do you draw the line? You know, you leave your family hanging there if you get sick. Anyway, I fear many people have confused comfort and entertainment with providing for one's family. Because providing for one's family means food, clothing, shelter. And yes, we have to make some compromises with a wicked, fallen, sinful world in order to secure food and clothing and shelter for our children and our wives. But don't confuse comfort and entertainment with food, clothing, and shelter. And don't confuse some sense of middle-class security with the biblical idea of providing for your family. I think maybe we're a little confused. I think that we're all, me included, we're all in for a rude awakening when we learn the true scale of our own sin and our own compromise and our own cowardice. And so that's why I thank God for Jesus Christ, because there's no way I can qualify. I know I'm compromised. I'm a coward. I know that I make the wrong decisions, and I want to be comfortable, and I want to be entertained, and I want to be secure. And anyway, so that I'm just going to leave that at that, because I don't want to, I wouldn't want to offend anyone. Or make anyone uncomfortable. I'd hate to make anyone think about anything that might make them uncomfortable. I don't want to trigger anybody. So we'll go from there back into the much more comfortable insurrection file and talk about a much more comfortable issue, Antifa. Because, hey, I'm not as bad as Antifa, right? Okay. A conservative in California has infiltrated Antifa. That's right. This is from the Liberty Loft. This infiltrator spoke to a local ABC affiliate in California who made the initial report, but then refused to call the group a domestic terrorist group, even after this guy told them what they were up to. He has audio and video tape recordings of the group talking about property destruction and even killing law enforcement officers. Yeah. The meeting took place in Sonoma County, not far from San Francisco. The leader of the Marxist insurrectionist Antifa group was a fellow called Marb, 25-year-old college student. He was arrested last year for assault on a police officer in Oakland, California, but the district attorney there declined to charge him. Did you get that? So this Antifa punk was in the hands of law enforcement last year for assaulting a cop, and he's out. And he's talking about killing policemen. And you take this to a reporter, and the reporter doesn't take it to the cops. Folks, we're living in an upside-down, backwards, dystopian hellscape. Anyway, they have a hit list. The group has an active hit list, according to the infiltrator, the conservative infiltrator. They want to target law enforcement officers, Trump supporters, and many others. The group promotes violence against such individuals and then encourages others to take photographs so they can celebrate the destruction. So that's the definition of a terrorist group. Back to the article from the Liberty Loft. Law enforcement action against the group was not mentioned in the article, and it appears the group continues to operate without any interference. So it's as I thought. Back in the old days, reporters were part of the infrastructure that preserves civilization, uncovering things that people want to cover up that could hurt people or be crimes, but not so anymore. Anyway, the Liberty Loft author concludes with, quote, rather than focusing on these radical groups, the Justice Department is focused on addressing systemic racism in policing. Unquote. How true is that? So while Antifa plots to kill police officers and other civilians, the Justice Department is hyperventilating over white supremacy and systemic racism. And the author at the Liberty Loft says, quote, if the local law enforcement cannot put an end to their actions, then federal law enforcement should step in. Well, how true is that? Yes, of course. But both local and federal law enforcement appear to be on their side, at least a goodly portion of the management. I don't think the average street cop is aligned with BLM and Antifa, but I think the average police chief is, and I think that the entire federal Justice Department obviously is. Folks, we've seen the enemy, right? And the enemy is wearing blue. I will confess that that was a bit self-indulgent to go through that entire solo and all of that. That's right, it's me. So we'll go now into the Everyday Emergency File. The Everyday Emergency File, and this is, by the way, just to buttress what I just said about the fact that law enforcement and district attorneys and the justice system in general, is being used as a weapon against innocent people. NBC is reporting that California is giving 76,000 inmates the opportunity to leave prison early. Oh, that's so nice. Well, they did this. This is now a second dump, right? They got the big dump from COVID, right? So they let a bunch of criminals out. And now changes were approved just this past week by the State Office of Administrative Law, whatever that is. Well, whatever it is, has a spokeswoman, named Dana. And what does Dana have to say from the Office of Administrative Law? The goal is to increase incentives for the incarcerated population to practice good behavior and follow the rules while serving their time and participate in rehabilitative and educational programs, which will lead to safer prisons.
Unquote.
That's Dana on why they're releasing 76,000. By the way, including violent offenders, repeat offenders, all of that. The Dana says that the regulations were provided as emergency regulations. Mm-hmm. That's right. The department was granted authority to make the changes by making them emergency regulations. What's the emergency? Oh, it's like everything's an emergency. Like all these people are in jail. That's an emergency. So anyway, do we all remember? So the emergency, by the way, has never ended. Everything's an emergency now. Ever since we collectively were bamboozled into believing that there was a healthcare emergency, which is demonstrably false at this point. It was demonstrably false within the first 2 weeks to slow the spread. It's been demonstrably false for the better part of a year, but it's still an emergency. Everything's an emergency. We're never going to get out of this emergency, people. And so they just said it was an emergency. That's all. Do we have to explain ourselves to you peasants? No. It's an emergency. We're going to let these people out of jail. Shut up. All right. So from there, we go into the treason file where John Kerry should be in custody right now. That's right. He informed Iran that Israel had carried out about 200 covert strikes against Iranian targets. He told this to Iranian Foreign Minister Mohammad Javad Zarif. And this was all revealed in a leaked recording obtained by not InfoWars or Tucker Carlson. No, this was obtained by the New York Times. And then Kerry came out. I think Kerry's people came out and said, oh, well, you know, the Iranians already knew it. And then the foreign minister was interviewed and he said, I did not know until John Kerry told me. We were all very surprised. So John Kerry's a traitor. And he should be in custody. The military should have dispatched to his house. Forget Rudy Giuliani. They should raid John Kerry. Yeah, Zarif revealed that to his astonishment, Kerry, who continued to meet with Zarif even after leaving office, told him that Israel had attacked Iranian interests in Syria at least 200 times. And John Kerry was in a position to know. He was a former Secretary of State. And although I can assure you that John Kerry does not know exactly what the IDF carried out or did not carry out, John Kerry is simply making assumptions. Because there's no way the Jews would let this guy know what they were up to. There's no, not specifically. But John Kerry should be in prison right now. He should be in a cell right now awaiting trial for treason. Because to betray an ally of the United States to an enemy, that's treason. And the war on terror is an ongoing situation. Okay, so we'll go from there, from the outright treason file to the widespread treason file, where andmagazine.com reports that due to the dangers of gain-of-function research, in 2015, the CDC ordered all such work to be terminated, and the work inside the United States did, in fact, come to an end. How did the head of infectious disease, Anthony Fauci, respond? Well, he continued to funnel money in violation of the CDC order through a private entity, EcoHealth, to a lab in Wuhan, China. Huh. This funding was discovered eventually by the Trump administration and cut off in April of 2020. So we were still sending money to the lab in Wuhan until April of 2020. Okay. By the way, April of 2020 is about when it became obvious that this emergency that we were all scared of, allegedly, that it wasn't an emergency. Anyway, let's see. Now, And so let's fast forward to now. Just last month, Anthony Fauci appeared via a Zoom session with Chinese Communist Party health expert Dr. Zhang Nanshan. Nanshan credited China's lockdown policies with winning its battle against COVID-19. And nowhere did Zhang address the fact that lockdowns have never been a part of planning or dealing with a pandemic, and that lockdowns have in fact failed. He didn't address that anywhere. He just said a China lockdown are very, very good. And then Fauci chimes in. What is Zhang? I'm sorry. Zhang also presented slides proving that China, that communist China had the world's best response to the pandemic. And the United States, of course, had the worst response. Fauci then comes on the Zoom call. And he says, I would underscore everything that Professor Zhang has said. Says Anthony Fauci. Fauci's remarks were then picked up and trumpeted by all of the usual Chinese communist propaganda organs. Because it appears Anthony Fauci is working for the Chinese Communist Party. It appears that way to me. Working for them or funded by them, or either they have pictures of him with a dead girl or a live boy or something. Something needs to be looked into with this Fauci guy, that's all. Not that we haven't been saying that for a while. And now to the widespread delusion file where Anthony Fauci wants to stoke the panic over in India. He says there's Newsmax reports, there's a COVID-19 emergency. It's an emergency over in India. And Dr. Fauci says to the Indians, you should think of this in some respects like a war. You know, like a war, like I never had the guts to sign up for anything that would even get me close to a war. But now I'm a wartime general. It's like a war. The enemy, you see, the enemy is the virus. So you know where the enemy is. So I would make it almost like wartime because it's an emergency, unquote. Anthony Fauci actually said that. First of all, Dr. Fauci, the enemy is the virus, so you know where the enemy is. Actually, we don't know where the enemy is. It's a virus. It's too small. We can't see it. We know it's a coronavirus. We know that it's aerosol, so it's pretty much everywhere. But we don't know exactly where it is, and we can't put up plexiglass to keep it from getting from his table to my table at the restaurant, like you've told us to do, Mr. Fauci. So in response to this panic and emergency, Biden has banned travel from India beginning next Tuesday because obviously the virus does not travel on weekends. We know that. So we're going to wait till next Tuesday. And then Anthony Fauci advises our Indian neighbors to an immediate shutdown for at least a few weeks could help disrupt the cycle of transmission, you see. And then you can take the critical steps to pull out of the emergency. You eventually see you lock down and you pull out, right? You lock down, right? Lock down and then pull out of the emergency. And then this guy's unbelievable. Talk about hubris. Now, the one thing I don't want to do is I don't want to get involved in criticism of India. I'm a public health person. I am not a political person. Says Anthony Fauci with a straight face. He added that COVID-19, when left to its own devices, will, quote, explode in society. It's like a bomb, like a war, like an emergency. Explode. If you don't respect this virus's ability to cause serious damage, you are going to get into trouble. Unquote. Be afraid. Be very, very scared. One thing I advise my Indian colleagues to do is panic and be very afraid. Okay, I made that last part up, but just barely. He says work must be done now to take specimens of this variant of the virus. We've got to determine if the vaccines now in use can fight against the variants. Okay, so does that mean when do we pull out of the emergency? If now you're gonna instruct us to take a warlike footing against every variant of this particular virus. So he intends this to never end. This never ends with Anthony Fauci. And there's a cohort of panicked, ignorant, delusional children that run the world who are going right along. They don't ever want this to end. And so I don't know how this ever ends. How do we ever pull back from the, how do we pull out of the emergency, Mr. Fauci? And so we go from there to the widespread panic file where Breitbart reports that crematoriums in Delhi began using their parking lots for mass funeral pyres amid a relentless surge of new Chinese coronavirus cases and deaths. So they just want to stoke the fear. Delhi, by the way, this is going on in the reports out of Delhi. So about 30 million people live in Delhi, okay? And the only report we have from an actual crematorium in Delhi is that they received somewhere between 85 and 100 bodies on April 22nd. And so, I mean, just I'm doing the math in my head really quickly. So you got a region of 30 million people, about 350 people or so die every day just by regular non-COVID emergencies, much less fashionable things, you know, like heart attacks and cancer, car accidents. So about 350 people die every day. And so 85 or 100 extra bodies, is that a crisis, really? I mean, I know that India is generally a third world cesspool. I've been there. I wouldn't wish it on my worst enemy. But really, 85 to 100 bodies in a day is okay. That math doesn't really add up to a crisis. Is it sad that people are getting sick and dying? Yes, it's sad. Is it a crisis? Is it emergency? Is it a war? I think not. I think there are people in the government in India who just love the idea of lording this emergency over their people too. And the Western media, they're more than happy to take any bad news and amplify it 1,000 times to keep everybody scared. And there's a mutant variant that we don't know. The vaccines aren't going to work. We'll have to go back into lockdown and then we'll pull out and then back in. Down, lockdown. And so while all this hysterical delusion is occurring around one specific virus that can be pretty nasty for some people, but it's not the end of the world, not even close. While all that's going on, let's check in with Taiwan. And just a little history lesson, because I know most of us were maleducated in the government schools. Taiwan is the Republic of China. It became an independent nation in 1949 when Chiang Kai-shek evacuated China following defeat at the hands of Mao Zedong's communists during the Chinese Civil War. Beijing today insists that Taiwan is a part of the People's Republic of China. Taipei, on the other hand, insists that the Taiwanese government represents the sole legitimate government of China. So do you understand the problem, children? Okay. Well, Taiwan's foreign minister, Joseph Wu, was interviewed by Sky News last Wednesday. And he said Chinese military forces, quote, seem to be preparing for their final military assault against Taiwan, unquote. That's the foreign minister, Joseph Wu, who has no interest in stoking a panic in Taiwan. But he is genuinely concerned about an existential threat from just across the South China Sea. That same Wednesday that Taiwan's foreign minister was interviewed, the Chinese People's Liberation Army announced, the official propaganda organ of the PLA, announced that it would leave no room for Taiwan's secessionist activities in any form. Wu's interview and the PLA Oregon statement comes as China ramps up its intrusions into Taiwanese waters and works to build up its navy. So this is real. This is something we should actually be concerned about. Okay? And let me make a prediction. If the Chinese make a military move against Taiwan in the next 12 months, I predict that China will lose in embarrassing fashion. They'll be bloodied and beaten back by the Taiwanese. And perhaps that would break the spell and end the myth of Chi-Com invincibility and inevitable global dominance and the control they seem to have over panicking the whole world and convincing everyone to lock down and follow them. Maybe it's going to take a good bloody punch in the nose by Taiwan to shake everybody loose of their... Well, I'm not going to... Of their irrational fear of China. They're just not that tough, guys. I know there's a lot of them. But you watch. You just watch. I mean, I watched the Indians dispatch the Chinese just a few months ago. Anyway, so from there, we'll go to something that we shouldn't be scared of, but we're getting ready to be, and that, of course, is aliens! That's right. Let's see, we've got Luis Elizondo. Who is this guy? He is he's a former Pentagon official. And he says UFOs exist, but the government doesn't want you to know it. And he says that he describes UFOs as a serious national security risk. The cover-up of UFOs has happened because of religious objections and fears of inciting public panic. Really? First of all, I don't know that there are any religious objectors in the government anymore. And fears of inciting a public panic, that there's a whole department in the government that's devoted to nothing but that. Anyway, he says there's a bombshell report on UFOs that's going to be released before the end of June. And then we're all going to be told that in addition to the mutant variants, virus mutations, variants, we also need to be worried about aliens. And then, I don't know, how do you mask up against the aliens? You got to put on the tinfoil right up top there. That's right, you get the tinfoil and the goggles. You're going to want the goggles and you're going to want a tinfoil under your hat. And then later on, we may do a second layer of tinfoil over the hat with the goggles. And then, of course, we'll have gloves. We'll want gloves against the aliens. And we hope that the aliens will be able to bring us a vaccine against the mutant variants as we all gain our war footing and go back into lockdown before we can pull out of the emergency as we've described it here. Thank you very much. And that's it, folks. That's the Weekly Worldview for this week. I want to thank my friends at Real Science Radio and at the Personhood Alliance and at American Right to Life and my other brother, Daryl, who makes it all happen. Here in the Weekly Worldview Studio, should the Lord tarry, we will return. Until then, may the grace of God go with you and may the peace of Jesus Christ be upon you.